book of Isaiah. Let's turn there. We'll begin with chapter 1. We'll try to get through 12 chapters tonight. I just wanted to just go kind of quickly through it because of the fact that most of this is kind of a review of those things. I know I really enjoyed that class on Isaiah, and I think I'm going to just enjoy this one on Jeremiah just as much. Sometimes we neglect the Old Testament in our study. We focus so much on the New Testament, and it's good to do that. We know that's the law that we're under, and that's the law that we have to follow and obey. But there's still a lot that we can learn from those Old Testament prophets. And as we said throughout the class on Isaiah, it seems sometimes like Isaiah was writing to us. Because of the things that he said, it seems like it fit our world today and our country just as much as it must have fit the Jewish nation of the time of his writing. Because we are now facing some of the same kinds of things that they were facing at that time. Isaiah chapter 1, beginning with verse 3. The ox knows his owner, and the donkey his master's crib. But Israel does not know. My people does not consider. He basically tells the people that they're not as smart as the ox and the donkey. Even, a dog knows its master. You know, all of these animals, they know. They know, they don't say, they don't bite the hand that feeds them and these kinds of things. They know. They know these things. And yet, we sometimes, as human beings, are supposed to be the crown of God's creation, and supposed to be smarter than all of these others. We don't know. We don't understand that God's the one that provides for us and cares for us, and the people of Israel certainly. He said in verse 2 that he had nourished and brought up those children, and they rebelled against him. And that's exactly what we do today many times. After all of the care and concern for us that he shows, we just ignore him. We just go the other way, go our own way. Then we come to chapter 2. Chapter 2 begins in verse 2. One of the verses of the prophecies concerning the establishment of Christ's kingdom. Isaiah says that it shall come to pass in the last days. In the Old Testament, in the last days refers to the coming of the Christian age. The Christian age is the last day. There won't be any more days after this is over. After the Christian age, there's not going to be another one. It's the last one, the last day. It says, it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountain and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his way, and we will walk in his path. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Very similar quotes. This is found in Micah chapter 4 and verse 2 as well. Both prophesied about that coming time when the law is going to go forth out of Zion, when the word of the Lord is going to go out from Jerusalem. And that's what happened in the gospel age, in the Christian age. The gospel began to be preached from Jerusalem. That's where it first started. And they speak of the Lord's house being established. It says the house of the God of Jacob in verse 3. And we see in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 15 that the house of the Lord, or God's house, is the church. So the church was established. God's house was established in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost, which we studied a little bit about this morning. That's what an event that was. So much so that Isaiah, some 900 years before it, was already talking about it. And what a great event it was going to be. Then we come to chapter 3. And this is one of those passages which, though it speaks of Jerusalem and Judah, it could just as easily have been Butler or the United States. It says in verse 9, the show of their countenance doth witness against them. They declare their that have come up recently with the homosexual marriages and all of these wicked things. It used to be that the people were ashamed and they hide the fact, but not anymore. They don't hide it. They proclaim it. They declare their sin. And they're proud of it. Just like in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. And indeed, the same consequences that faced Sodom and Gomorrah are the same consequences that face us today if we behave in those same ways that they did. That they have rewarded evil unto themselves. In other words, they're going to receive the reward for the things that they do. And then we come to chapter 4, verse number 2. It says, in that day shall the branch of the Lord be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped of Israel. There's several times throughout the book of Isaiah that he refers to this branch, and the branch being, of course, Christ. And other of the prophets refer to the branch as well. Jeremiah refers to the branch. And they all point toward that coming time. Malachi also mentions the branch. That branch of the Lord. It's a growing thing now. As a result of Jesus coming, he was the branch. What comes off of a branch? More little branches. And then leaves and flowers and all sorts of things grow from that branch. Just as Jesus said that he must abide in him and he in us. He said we can't produce fruit if we're not abiding in him. And that particular instance referred to himself as the vine and us as the branches. But he was the source and we had to grow out from him. Then we see in chapter 5, probably two or three of the most quoted passages out of Isaiah. Chapter 5 and verse 20 and 21. Isaiah says, woe unto them that call evil good, and good evil. That put darkness for light, and light for darkness. That put bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes, and prudent in their own sight. Doesn't that sound just like how mixed up our world is today? Something that's evil is referred to as being a good thing, while something that's good is condemned. When we speak out against sinfulness, we're bigots, we're intolerant, we're hateful and guilty of hate speech and hate crime. But they can do all manner of wickedness, and it's applauded as freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, whatever category they want to stick it in. But however wicked it may be, it's their freedom to do that. But if we ever say anything against it, we're the bad guy. How mixed up our world is becoming. We were discussing not long ago with my parents about these things. And we talked about the fact that, you know, it's ever coming closer to the time like it was in the early centuries where Christians would be persecuted. Or physically persecuted, not just made fun of as we are now. But it won't be long. It won't be long at all before we're going to be back in that same boat if things don't change quickly. We're going to be the ones that are receiving all of the hate crime against us, but they won't be called that then. They'll have another name for it and it'll be allowable. At that time. Then we come to chapter 6. Chapter 6, Isaiah puts forth the kind of attitude that we all should have. The Lord asked the question in Isaiah 6 and verse 8. The voice of the Lord, I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who will go for us? Then said I, here am I, send me. There's a song, I'm not sure if it's going to be sung, but we haven't sung it out over yet. But there's a song that goes along that way. Here am I, send me. And Lord, send me. But are we ready? Are we willing for God to send us? to someone with the gospel, with his word, or do we shy away? We talked this morning, we talked about Jeremiah, how Jeremiah was kind of humble. He didn't want to go. He said, but Lord, I'm just a youth. I'm too young. I can't. Now, they won't listen to me. The same thing Moses said. It's the same thing. You know, it seems like everyone that God called had this kind of attitude, but Isaiah did. When God said, this is going to go, Isaiah said, the Lord said, here I am for me. I'll go. If something needs to be done, I'll do it. And we need to have that kind of an attitude that he had. And then, just after that is a section of scripture that is quoted in the New Testament by Christ concerning the Jews of his time. You see, people don't change very much. 900 years later, the same thing applies to the people, and still today. But he says in verse 9, go and tell this people, hear ye indeed, but understand not, and see ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their hearts, and convert, and be healed. So if I'm reading that, I think, well, what does God not want people to repent? No, we know the Lord is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. He wants everyone to repent. But what he's saying is, as you preach the truth, there are going to be those who are going to harden their hearts, they're going to close their ears, they're going to shut their eyes, and even though they hear the words, and even though they see the text on the page, they're not going to understand it, they're not going to listen to it, and they're not going to believe it. And if they would, they could convert, they could be converted and be healed, but they're not going to do it. They just won't listen, even though the plain truth is right there for them. But the same thing that was true in Isaiah's time was true in Jesus' time, and it's true today. And still, people are the same. They have not changed. One of the things, as we were going through our lessons in Isaiah, one of the things that just struck me that I just thought was very interesting was in chapter 7. And all my life I've heard verse 14, and that is a good verse, and certainly we want to mark that one. The Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel, for the reference to Christ coming into the world. But just before that, one of the things that was pointed out in one of our lessons, and if you weren't in that class, you might be of interest to you as well, that as Isaiah is speaking on behalf of God to King Ahaz, in verse 11 he says, ask me a sign of the Lord thy God. Ask it either in the depth or in the height above. I would say that Ahaz refuses and says, I won't ask, I'm not going to tempt the Lord. Sounds good, but of course it wasn't a good excuse. He was really just not wanting to have proof, not wanting to listen. And then Isaiah responds in verse 13, hear ye now, house of David, it is a small thing for you to weary men, but will ye weary my God also? So we see the change there, and we talked about that class a little bit, but you know, it's the Lord thy God. But then when Ahaz rejects it, it's not the Lord thy God anymore, it's now my God. And the change, that God is not going to continue to be your God if you reject him. He gave Ahaz the chance. He said, the Lord your God. But then, at the next opportunity after the rejection, he said, well, you know, I'm still Isaiah's God, but I'm not your God anymore. Then we come to chapter 8. And chapter 8, verse 12, I think about when I drive sometimes late at night and listen to the radio, I listen to the talk radio station. Boy, I tell you, they think that everything that has ever happened in the world was a conspiracy orchestrated by somebody on some of those talk shows that they call in. And I think sometimes we're quick to want to jump on that bandwagon of thinking that everybody's out to get us, a little paranoia, a little bit of thinking everybody's going to try to control this or control that. But God says to Isaiah, and in the King James he uses the word confederacy, other translations use the word conspiracy here, say ye not a confederacy to all them to whom this people shall say, a confederacy, neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. And the one thing you find about this group of people, that is always looking for a conspiracy. They're always looking for they always think there's a dark secret government behind the government that's really controlling things. And they always, and there's always one individual that's wreaking all this havoc and all of these kinds of things. And God tells Isaiah, don't be afraid of all the things they're afraid of. And that's what you find with these people. They're afraid of everything. Now, they won't do it. They don't want to have a social security number because they think it's the mark of the beast. They don't want to have a computer because they think the government can look into their houses with it. Or they think just on and on. They think everything. They're afraid that their car, has listening devices posted in it where the government can hear everything they say. Or the OnStar system is something that, some of those things, it could happen, sure. That's the thing about it. It could happen. But they just go on and on, and they're afraid of everything. They're afraid to live lives. And God tells Isaiah, don't fear their fear. Don't be afraid of all of them. Again, coming back to Jeremiah, we talked about this warning that God promised Jeremiah. He would deliver him. And God makes those same kinds of promises to us today. We will walk with him. He will protect us from those things. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't die. That doesn't mean that bad things won't happen to us. But more important than our life is our soul. And God's going to deliver that soul if we remain faithful to him. Then we come to chapter 9. Another passage again that is well known. Isaiah writes, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it, and to establish it with judgment and with justice, from henceforth even forever, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. And of course we know these references referring to that child that was prophesied back in chapter 7, Jesus. And that he was going to establish his kingdom, that he is even now reigning upon the throne of David. With all of us that are waiting for that reign to begin, waiting for God to establish his kingdom, they missed it. Happened 2,000 years ago. And Christ has been reigning on the throne of David ever since. Not the physical, literal throne, but spiritually he has been reigning over God's people, as David did. Then we come to chapter 10. Chapter 10 is a message that we need to send our governing officials, and of course one also that in the church we need to keep in mind for the leaders of the church, one that in the family, mothers and fathers need to keep in mind in regards to their children. Isaiah writes, woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, and that write grievousness which they have prescribed, to turn aside the needy from judgment, and to take away the right from the poor of my people, that widows may be their prey, and that they may rob the fatherless. And what will ye do in the day of visitation, and in the desolation which shall come from afar? To whom will ye flee for help, and where will ye leave your glory? Some of the things that Jesus condemned the scribes and the Pharisees for. He said they were devouring widows' houses. They weren't being fair. They weren't being just. They were taking advantage of the poor. And they were treating them without the proper respect, those who were God's children. And yet they were taking advantage of them and not treating them in the way that they should. He says, woe unto you. When you make unrighteous law, when you make unjust law, when you make oppressive type, grievous prescriptions, when you make rules and regulations that are too hard for the people, that make it a yoke of bondage, and in the religious world, in the home, in secular society as well, these things can happen in any of those places. But we all have to remember, whether it be as parents, whether it be as leaders in the church, whether it be as governing officials in a country or a state or a city, or wherever it might be, that anyone who's in authority over others is also under the authority of God. And they will have to answer for how they've treated those that are under their authority. Parents will have to give account for the way that they have handled their children. Leaders in the church will have to give account for the way they've led the church. And leaders in government will have to give an account for the laws and the rules they made for society and how they handled themselves. Also in chapter 10, we wanted to notice verse 21. God says, the remnant shall return, even the remnant of Jacob, unto the mighty God. There is always the remnant. May not be very big. May not seem like much. But always there was a remnant. In Noah's day, it was only 8 folks. In Elijah's day, there were 9,000 who had 1,000 feet of ale. In Isaiah's day, I don't know how many were left. But he brought back a remnant. And then you can read about that in Ezra and Nehemiah. Those who came back out of the captivity. And then, of course, in the Christian age, when the Christian age began on the day of Pentecost, that remnant began to come back to God again. The 3,000 on the day of Pentecost. Later we have a number of 5,000 and so forth. They continue to grow. And the remnant continue to increase. Those that were coming back to God. Then we come to chapter 11. Chapter 11 in verse 1 again. There shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his root. Jeremiah 23:5-6 echoes this kind of the same thought. But then also in verse 10 it says, and in that day there shall be a root of Jesse which shall stand for an ensign of the people. To it shall the Gentiles speak, and his rest shall be glorious. And one of the lessons that we studied discussed how Jesus could be both a branch and a root, because those two are very different things. You generally think of the root as something that produces the tree, and the branch is something that's produced by the tree. And so we see this, the uniqueness of Jesus Christ, how he started it all. He was there at creation. He was the root of it all. But then also, he, when he became flesh and blood, became a branch of it as well. He was both the root and the branch. And verse 10, Romans chapter 15 and verse 12 makes reference to that as well. And then we'll finish tonight with chapter 12. Chapter 12, just a short song of praise to the Lord. It's amazing how many times different writers in the Bible, different inspired writers at different events, on different occasions, well, just burst out into songs of praise to God as they're being inspired to write the things. And certainly as Isaiah has just written about the coming Christ, what better time to break out into a song of praise to God. But in verse 5 of chapter 12, he says, sing unto the Lord, for he has done excellent things. This is known in all the earth. Sing unto the Lord, for he's done excellent things. That's as good a reason to sing as any I can think of. He's done excellent things. When we think about all of the things that he has done, amazing. Known throughout the world. You know, it's amazing. It's taken years and years of expert help for people to get away from an understanding that there's a God. It's taken years of people trying and trying to teach and to subvert people and to corrupt the truth to get people to believe there's not a God. In every tribe, in the furthest reaches from civilization, they understand that there is something greater than them. That's above them, that's beyond them. They all understand it. It's innate in every human being to understand that. But our modern societies, our modern sciences, and supposedly wise men have proclaimed that God is dead. There is no God. It's just something that weak-minded people made up because they needed something to depend on that wasn't really there. And then they keep these claims, and they say anything. But it's taken years. Even the heathen, the idea, of course, of just one God was a unique thing to certain groups. But even even the heathen, even the Romans, even the Greeks, well, they didn't just have one God, they had a whole bunch of gods, because they didn't even realize that there would be one being that could be powerful enough to do all those things. So they had one God that made the sun rise, and one God that took care of the sea, and one God that took care of the wind, and so they had, but they knew that somebody, something greater than themselves, had to be out there to control these things. Had to be. Because they couldn't do it, and we can't do it. We can't control the weather, we can't even predict the weather half the time. And so, why is it then that we think that we're all so knowledgeable, and when I say we, I don't mean us individually, but modern man, to say that God is a myth, that he's make-believe? Where do they get that kind of notion, to use a good old Southern term? Where do they get that? And I think that they can get away with denying God when, as Isaiah said, he does all these excellent works, and there goes without one. You're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation. Perhaps you haven't submitted yourself fully to that one true God. You need to do that tonight, whether it be an initial obedience to him, or whether it be as a Christian.